Lynn, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, right here with Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. And we love to hear from you. The easiest way is just to go on naturalnurse.com. And there we have a link to all those things that you might like to do, like Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all of that. But really, most of the information is on the website at naturalnurse.com. For instance, if you go there and go to classes and events, you will learn about a lot of the things that we are doing right here at Natural Alternatives. For instance, you'll see listed there in February, which is still up, Echo Tours for Cures, the education vacation in Jamaica, West Indies. And our own co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, is in Jamaica today, actually with a group where he is hosting a lot of esteemed botanical experts and teachers in the island of Jamaica, where they're studying a lot about the native plants and the traditional healing techniques of the Maroon elders. So something to think about for next year, because this year we're there now. But we have so many online classes coming up as well. We have in March, starting right up, our once a year offering of the Natural Nurse Herb Certification course. And that is actually a 4-month course, March, April, May and June. And if you finish the whole course and do all the homework, there's quite a bit of homework, you'll go outside and you'll actually make herbal remedies for yourself and mail it to me finally, although most of the class is online. And if you miss a class in terms of when we do it live online, all of them are archived. So you have a full year to go ahead and finish all the work. So to join us for that, you just go to naturalnurse.com under classes and workshops, scroll down to March, and you'll see the Natural Nurse Herb Certification course online. By the way, that has 18 CEU credits for any kind of health professional, such as a nurse or a nurse practitioner, a licensed acupuncturist, licensed massage therapist, a registered dietitian, a clinical nutritionist, and other health professionals. But you don't have to be a health professional to take it. Anyone can take it, and it is user-friendly, which means can be used towards your RH, which is a registered herbalist, and that anyone can work on that and use this as part of their RH training. So we have a lot of other classes coming up as well, such as walking in the field in June and July, where we'll actually go in the field, and that'll be at Restoration Farm on Long Island. So check out the website at naturalnurse.com. By the way, if you go to media and radio shows, you'll find links to about 3,000 of our archived radio shows. I believe the word now has morphed into podcasts, even though we are really radio shows. We do it on air in a lot of locations, as well as it being broadcast online, such as at PRN, where we are today. And today, we are so happy to feature as our guest, Dr. Matthew Yusefzadeh. It's a little hard to say his last name, but we're going to call him Dr. Matthew. And he is with the Institute on the Biology of Aging and Metabolism in the Department of Biochemistry, Molecular Biology, and Biophysics at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. He has published more than 30 scientific papers with a heavy emphasis on cellular senescence. What is that? We will find out from Dr. Matt. And aging. Also, a recent study published just in 2021 is in the journal Science, and that is not an easy thing to do, to get your work published in these mainstream peer-reviewed medical journals. And that actually showed that older cells called senescent cells exacerbate COVID-19, which may be part of the explanation on why older people also struggle with recovery from the virus more than younger people. So that's a fascinating brand new piece of information. He is also on the scientific advisory board for a laboratory called SRW Laboratories, and I am on their website. It's a fascinating website. You can go to it. It's science researchwellness.com. And lots of interesting information there about really scientifically studied new ingredients. And a lot of them are really based in natural. So I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Matt.
Thank you for having me, Ellen. I'm excited to be here.
And we did have a previous radio show. I was so impressed with your knowledge and depth of understanding, where you're bringing together what is the cutting edge of what's known in science, and I'm sure you've also studied what was known way before, and the development of natural interventions that can be useful to keep our bodies healthy. But you're doing it really on a cellular level.
Yeah, we're definitely trying to harness natural products if we can to use them to sort of target some of these root pillars of aging, and aging being sort of the primary risk factor for a number of chronic diseases.
Well, you know what? In a way, I really wonder about that. Being an elder myself, mm-hmm. and of course getting more elder every year, I am not so happy with the term anti-aging, because to be against aging, you know, seems like you want to die young. I mean, that's one way to me it sounds, because we are all going to age. So it's not like these things are going to stop you from aging. So what do they do?
So I think you're right. It does come down to language. Sort of, is anti-aging the same thing as sort of being anti-gravity or against gravity? You know, I think we really use a couple of different terms in our field. We use lifespan, which is how long you live. And then we have another concept called health span, which is disease-free survival. And we would like that to, we would like your health span, that sort of period of healthy functionality, to consume as much of your lifespan as possible. So that you
yes.
have this really compressed window of aging. And sort of as you become elderly, maybe you become sort of the welderly.
Oh, these are great words.
Yeah.
I love that. I would say I am certainly part of the welderly. And when you're talking about health span, my father, who passed away just fairly recently, I guess it's getting to be 2 years ago now, I have to say, I hope I follow in his footsteps. I do look a lot like him. But he was absolutely well. The day he passed away, he was driving and drinking, by the way, which he did every evening his whole entire life, 94 years, playing pool that day and beating everybody, swimming, running around, talking to everybody, having fun, came home, had a stroke, goodbye.
Wow.
So he
yeah.
was never old. He was never elderly. He never wore glasses. He kept driving. He was never, you know, with someone taking care of him and taking him to the bathroom. You know, just none yeah. of that. Just skip all of it.
No, I think that's everybody's goal, is to not have a functional decline. You know, maybe you end up passing away at 107 because, you know, you crash your sports car going, you know, 100 miles an hour through the desert or something, or skydiving.
Yeah, so that is possible. So I guess what we're looking at through your research and your knowledge is, you know, genetics are involved, right? Because almost every single person in my family lives to 94. My
almost
father
definitely.
Even told me, he told me that year, he said, well, I'm going to be 94. You better know we have a, you know, date, a turnoff date, because he had 8 brothers and sisters. And mm-hmm. all of them more or less went right around at 94. So he said, just so you know. But some of it is genetic, and that I don't know if we can do much about. But then you're saying there are these things where we can influence the on a cellular level, the breakdown of cells.
Yeah, but even going back to your point about genetics, you're totally right. There's a genetic component, and maybe you can't do so much about it in the immediate short-term sense, but we can study it and learn more about it, that, you know, what pushes the aging curve forward, sort of in these diseases called progerias, things that accelerate aging. And that was helped to sort of determine some of the root causes of it, but also, you know, genetics that delay aging. So we do look at the genetic components of individuals called centenarians, so those that live to 100 years or more, because there is a genetic component to them to some extent.
And not just live, but live, and they're still like you know, an aunt I had that was 106, mm-hmm. and they her vision did go finally, which really annoyed her. Then she went to using books that you listen to. And, okay. You know, listening to news on TV, they made her use a walker. But what she did was pick up the walker and run all around with it. You know,
that's awesome. Yeah. So there's definitely genetic components, and they are used and are studied, because what they can do is give us insight into these mechanisms or pillars of aging. And some of those can be targeted even through possible use of natural products.
Now, what about the term zombie cell? That might be new to a lot of our listeners. I'll tell you, it was new to me when we were discussing doing this show. So from your point of view, what does that mean, zombie cell?
Sure. So zombie cells are kind of a common name that we call senescent cells. And senescent cells are originally normal cells that have experienced some form of stress. It could have been oxidative stress, exhaustion, dysfunction that occurs internally, whether it be through the mitochondria or damage to the DNA or telomere attrition or sort of erosion of telomeres. And these processes can occur both extrinsically. So coming from outside the cell, it could be an environmental exposure or some instance of outside insult, as well as intrinsically. So just internally, processes that can occur can release damage that can basically affect these cells. And these stressed out cells, they can have a couple of different options. They can immediately die undergoing a programmed cell death. They could possibly have mutations and other alterations that might allow them to transform into a cancer cell. Or they could become stressed out and just invoke this process called cellular senescence. And cellular senescence was really an evolved anti-cancer response. And we never had to worry about these senescent cells, you know, because we never lived long enough until, say, 200 years ago when life expectancy, you know, dramatically increased through medicine and public health and sanitation and good personal hygiene. So you didn't have to worry about them. But as we found out now, these senescent cells, they didn't sort of just sit there and accumulate with aging. They accumulate with aging, but they're also incredibly potent drivers of aging. And what they can do, we call them zombie cells because they're refractory to cell death. They're sort of these undead cells that will stick around for a really long time. And when we're younger, we have a healthy immune system, which can clear them out. But as we get older, our immune system loses its capability to clear them out, as well as we start producing more of these cells. And they can even spread like zombies, sort of by releasing inflammatory factors. And it's sort of what's like a bad apple spoils the bushel is a good analogy for it.
Is there a way to get a test where you can see if you have an accumulation of these zombie cells?
Yes. So there's a test that was created about a decade ago by a gentleman named Ned Sharpless back when he was at UNC Chapel Hill. Ned moved on to become the National Cancer Institute director. And for a brief period of time, he was the FDA commissioner before moving back to the National Cancer Institute. And what he and his lab developed was a test where you could draw a blood sample and isolate your peripheral T cells, so your immune cells that are circulating in the blood, and measure the expression of the senescence marker called P16. And it was a really good surrogate biomarker for sort of systemic senescence throughout your body. Because
okay, so let's tell people what that means, though. So yeah, so it's an indicator of how much you're aging.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's great. It's a great indicator because you have these senescent cells that are circulating throughout your body, and they're experiencing this versus sort of testing, you know, a cheek swab or something like else, where it's really a localized analysis and not a broad analysis throughout your body.
So this is a test that is being used, or, I mean, how would someone get that if they wanted to?
Yes, I believe there's companies out there that are offering them.
And what would they ask? What would someone ask for if they were interested in getting it? Do you know? Because they may have a name for it, or just how would they describe it?
You would basically ask for senescence analysis, and we call them, the cells we call are PBMCs, peripheral blood mononuclear cells.
Okay, great. I'm going to look that up because I recently had a test done by, you know, this Genova Labs and other labs that do really in-depth testing. So I'm going to see if that was one of the things that they tested, because why shouldn't we know? If someone knows, you know, that might be, I mean, it's probably good to take all the actions you can against them to begin with. But if you know, you can monitor how you're doing.
Yes. Oh, yes. And it's being used. So I was part of a group of authors and included authors from the Mayo Clinic where they ran an exercise intervention study in elderly individuals. And what they used this test to basically measure senescent cell burden before and after the exercise intervention, and saw a significant decrease in the senescent cells that were circulating throughout their body.
Wow. I would say that is something for every single listener to take to heart immediately, because what does it cost to exercise?
A pair of tennis shoes.
You know? Or how about just sneakers? So tell us about that study more. What exercise intervention was used and who was the population?
So there's a healthy aging population that is tracked at the Mayo Clinic, and it was just a brief, I believe, just low intensity exercise regimen that was done for a number of weeks. And what they did was they measured senescent cell burden before and after, and as well as those circulating inflammatory molecules that can spread senescence. And those all went down in the exercise group.
Okay.
And
what was, who was the population in the exercise group, and what kind of exercise intervention was used?
Oh, I'll have to dig that up for a second. But okay. So they were measuring also physical metrics, and their physical performance metrics also improved.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I just want to tell our listeners that this wasn't one of the questions that Dr. Matt was originally going to discuss. I just went off on a tangent, but we can also look up that study, right? Has it been published?
It has, yes. It was a 12-week study with a structured exercise program, which I would have to find for
okay.
you.
Okay, so we don't know, because that structured exercise program might have been designed with a company who sells certain exercise equipment. Sometimes that's who funds it. Or it might just be, you know, like you said, walking or playing tennis. Or, and how old was the population? Because certainly a study done on 70-year-olds, and there have been exercise studies that I've seen done really in nursing homes on people in wheelchairs.
Sure.
Who had all kinds of improvement just from sitting in the wheelchair and lifting weights.
So the average age of the subjects was 67 years of age.
Oh, great.
Plus okay. or minus about 5.5 years. My understanding, there was no sort of industry sponsor. It was actually controlled through a clinical trial that's being run at the Mayo Clinic called the Active Older Adult Program on Health
great.
And Well-Being.
That is fantastic. So this is, I'm hoping, and one of the reasons we've been doing this show, by the way, we've been doing this show, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, since the inception of this radio station, this Gary Null station, Progressive Radio Network. So we've been doing this since then. I forget what year that is, but we've started our radio shows in 1987. So we've been doing them a very, very long time. And this is something that we are always talking about, how anyone at any stage of life can start exercising, and it's going to be positive. And you're going so much more deeply into, Dr. Matt, exactly why that might help, like a deeper understanding about these supposedly called zombie cells, as you said, senescent cells, and how exercise can positively influence them. And I imagine there is a range, like if you over-exercise, like you never exercised in your life, and then you're going to do a marathon. So now you're doing, you know, running 10 miles a day. That's probably not as helpful as doing something more moderate and long-term.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an issue of overtraining where you could be damaging structures, and that could also, could in turn cause a increase in senescent cell burden. You know, we see that with things like osteoarthritis, but we're still trying to really learn a lot more how exercise impacts cellular senescence. And in fact, the study that I was previously referencing was the first in human evidence that senescence and its biomarkers are significantly lowered by exercise programs.
Right, because they're looking at that particular thing. So they're measuring the senescent cells, which is now, I guess, a blood test that people actually can get.
Yes.
Very often these tests are not covered by health insurance, which they should be, I think, because there's so much that we can do, even looking at a lot of these natural interventions, which we'll go into more shortly, that really are so cost effective. And also when we look at the adverse effect profile of using something like exercise and healthy eating and including foods that might help get rid of zombie cells. I mean, there's so much that we can do.
Oh, most definitely. We are working with others at different sites to create what's called a translational geroscience network. And geroscience is really the study of aging, to sort of create a marker panel, sort of a battery of tests that would be used to assess aging for clinical trials. And hopefully there's a way that we can democratize them so that other institutions can be using them clinically.
Right. And then, you know, cost is a factor, because when things are not covered by health insurance, then they're usually limited to the wealthy.
Sure.
You know, which we've had in natural medicine. I worked at a clinic for 23 years as the head nurse at the Corsello Center for Complementary Medicine. And we did a very wise battery of tests that really went deeply into your nutrients. What are your nutrient levels? And this was way back in the 80s, but it was so helpful. So people didn't take this whole big pile of pills. We looked at what they were low in, where on the Krebs cycle was that malic acid deficiency important, and really targeted then both the diet and nutrient and supplement interventions based on those individual requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that should be just mainstream good medicine.
Yeah, I think, you know, comprehensive sort of analyses of individuals, you know, it shows you where you're lacking, where you're great, and, you know, you can really get into precision sort of wellness.
So what are like a few beneficial health reasons for eliminating these zombie cells anytime?
Sure. So they accumulate not only with chronological age, so the number that's on your driver's license, but as well as biological aging. So there's all these different diseases that have senescent cell accumulation, which can help further drive the disease. So osteoarthritis, chronic kidney disease, type 2 diabetes, as well as metabolic syndrome. So in the preclinical models, the preclinical studies, it was shown that reduction of senescent cells helped to improve the outcomes in these disease studies, or they alleviated or delayed the onset or severity of these conditions.
Well, I was really interested that you did some research specifically on COVID-19, because I'm sure we've all heard that it seems that elderly people have a worse outcome.
Yes. So before COVID-19, we were sort of kicking around a hypothesis, or just an idea, that we knew that elderly individuals or people that were chronologically or biologically older had this pre-existing senescent cell burden. So they had more senescent cells in their body than a younger or very healthy individual that would be relative to their age. And we thought that these senescent cells would sort of be pre-primed or just raring to go to release a lot of inflammation. And we started to see that with COVID, that the elderly were having worse outcomes because they were having these massive, what we called cytokine storms, so the release of inflammatory molecules. And so we had been modeling some of that with preclinical studies. And what we did to sort of rapidly test our senolytics or compounds that selectively target these zombie cells or senescent cells was to use an animal model of beta coronavirus infection. And what we saw was that in the elderly mice, there was almost 100% mortality when exposed to this beta coronavirus, whereas the younger mice, really none of them had any issues and they all survived. And it was very likely due to these senescent cells that were there, or that's a component of it. And that when we treated these mice with a senolytic, so a drug that targets senescent cells, in this case, a natural product called facetin, it increased survival in these mice and led to better outcomes by reducing that senescent cell burden and reducing that cytokine or inflammatory storm.
So that thing that you used, what kind of, you said it's a natural substance. What is it extracted from?
So facetin is what's known as a polyphenol flavonoid, which is sort of the chemical term for it of how you would describe what it actually looks like. It's found in fruits, particularly strawberries. So you can get it that way.
But I imagine you have to eat a lot of strawberries.
You would probably A, go broke from buying strawberries, and B, get sick and tired of eating strawberries before you could ever even achieve a biological benefit. So the only way to get a meaningful amount of facetin into you is through supplementation.
But it doesn't hurt to eat strawberries,
No, they're
when you're
delicious and
finding
they're
out,
good for you,
right?
right?
I really prefer organic ones because, unfortunately, that's one of the crops that the inorganic ones are very highly sprayed. So, spending another dollar for a package of organic strawberries might be a good idea, and including them more often in your diet. It's just amazing that then, like you said, you can't expect it to have enough of this isolate to really help you, but it's also amazing that it has it in it.
Yes, and historically, individuals have been taking facetin, in supplement form for cognitive enhancement long for a long, long time. And we identified it blindly in a non-biased fashion by seeing that it was able to eliminate the senescent or zombie cells. And in 2018, we published a preclinical study showing that it reduced senescent cells and extended not only lifespan, but that health span, that disease-free survival in animal models. And so these mice that were basically given their normal food or food with facetin in it. And so those mice lived longer, they had less disease in them. And what this work did was go on to start a number of clinical trials with facetin. The first trial being the use of facetin for the investigation of frailty.
That's just amazing. And I do want to tell our listeners, first of all, we're going to go for a little break right here, Dr. Matt, but I do want to tell our listeners that while Dr. Matt is talking, I went to scienceresearchwellness.com, where they explain a lot of these extracts they have been working on. So this is facetin, FISETIN, and it's in strawberries, as Dr. Matt mentioned, but also they extract it from a particular tree called the smoke tree. It's also in apples. There you go. Apple a day keeps the doctor away. So the more science that we have, I'm very often understanding things we already know, like exercise and eat strawberries and apples, and perhaps take a supplement of a concentrated facetin that's been extracted. So there is so much that we can do. We're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We'll listen to the Natural Medicine Chest. And when we come back, we will continue our fascinating conversation with Dr. Matt Yousafzai. And we'll let him pronounce his last name when we come back, just so you get it correctly. But we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stone. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. We're so happy that you're joining us today. And we're particularly pleased to have as our guest a preeminent researcher and focusing on so much in natural therapies. And that is Dr. Matt Yousefzada. Are you there, Dr. Matt?
I am.
There you are. I see you there. Thank you for joining us back again. Let's share with our listeners a little bit about your background. How did you become interested in doing deep scientific work? And a lot of people with your qualifications and depth of knowledge really are working more in the pharmaceutical industry. What brought you into investigating natural product chemistry?
Really sort of got into it from wanting to understand the disease processes and molecularly how they occur. And, you know, some of the first compounds that we were looking at for senescence were unfortunately utilization of repurposed drugs, some of them being chemotherapeutics. Obviously, they have their downside. It's also not very popular and people would be refractory towards even using it prophylactically. So in the best case scenario is we could create a safe and natural product compound that could function to get rid of senescent cells.
So actually the fact that the natural compound might be able to do that too. And it seems like when you look at the website here that it's true, you know, because they're really saying now a lot of these are animal studies, which is certainly a good place to start. And then if you're thinking about the fact that a lot of these natural compounds, like what are the adverse effects?
So a lot of the these some of these natural compounds, and granted, everything can be toxic. Water could be toxic. So there's what's called a therapeutic window where too little of a compound and you receive no biological benefit. And at the opposite end, too much of a compound, you may get some biological benefit, but you do get toxicity. So we're really looking for an effective range of concentration where there's no toxicity. And that sometimes seems to be pretty easily achievable using natural products.
Yeah, well, that's, I've always been a big fan of this, but this brings, you know, your work really brings it to a new level because, you know, a lot of it is more quantifiable where you actually can measure exactly what's going on in terms of a window, a therapeutic window, but also looking at things like antioxidant synthesis and supporting the body. Who does the body naturally work to try to get rid of these zombie cells as part of a natural metabolic process?
So it does, and it really, it relies upon the immune system to do it, where initially these inflammatory molecules that these zombie cells secrete, they're not intentionally meant to sort of infect or make other zombie cells. They're meant to send signals to the immune cells to tell them to come in and eat me or destroy me because I'm stressed out. I no longer am serving my purpose.
So that, however, I imagine in terms of a dysregulation or over-regulating that could also lead to autoimmune disease.
It definitely can. And just this hyperinflammatory condition and what we call sterile or non-pathogenic scenario is what we term inflammaging, that the inflammation is driving aging. And you're right, in some contexts, it can drive autoimmunity.
Yeah, as we write in our book that Dr. Zamperin and I wrote, which is called Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, we explain that process. And sometimes the cells that are supposed to be protecting you, they actually do get dysregulated and in a way confused because they will sometimes pick up part of the body's own cell and then they memorize that as an invader.
Exactly. And there is some thought that cellular senescence or these zombie cells could play a role in that. Currently, there's even some clinical trials that are starting with using facetin to investigate the biological benefit in patients with osteoarthritis.
So that's interesting. And then there's a whole range of other natural products that, you know, basically they are researching at science.researchwellness.com, and anyone can look at them. They really have a wide array of all natural things. Like there's something from cat's claw and eggshells, you know, just natural, starting out in a very natural way, isolating it and finding that it has quite a good support system in terms of getting rid of the senescent cells or some other mechanism of action.
Yeah. So cellular senescence is just but one of many pillars of aging. There's about nine of them. You know, another one being there's this process that we call autophagy, and it's really the cell's recycling program. And what autophagy can do, it works in two different contexts. They call them micro and macro autophagy. So it's sort of like micro and macro economics, if you think about it, where at the macro level, when proteins and other things get damaged, autophagy can take those damaged or dysfunctional proteins and break them back apart, sort of taking them apart to reuse them. Or in micro autophagy, in times of sort of a resource allocation issue where you don't have enough resources, you break things back down to reuse them for what you need them for.
Because perhaps something that was a precursor is what your body needs, even though it had already been complexed into a different kind of molecule.
Exactly. It'd almost be like taking apart something to use the screw for something else.
Yeah, just, you know, I'm sure you remain completely fascinated while you're doing this at all times, because there's always more to learn, but a lot of it really makes perfect common sense.
Yeah, there's so much cool stuff that we get to see every day as we learn more and we build better tools to understand these things. And, you know, like I was talking about with autophagy, that recycling program really sort of goes off the rails with aging too. And we know that senescence can influence autophagy and autophagy can influence senescence. So all these pillars of aging are actually very interconnected.
And what would be the best way for people to maybe, you know, test how much? I know one test that I recommend that everybody can easily get is just look at CRP. And that's a test that is covered. Anyone can get that at their doctor. And that really does reflect hidden inflammation. And you've brought up inflammation as part of the senescence mechanism.
Yes. So there's and typically your normal metabolic panel, there's markers that you can see that reflect that systemic inflammation, like you were talking about, CRP or what's called C-reactive protein. There's another one, IL-6, interleukin-6 is one of those inflammatory molecules that's released by senescent cells. It's also activated during periods of infection. So probably don't take this test if you have a cold, but if
you're it's going to be elevated and then you'll be worried for no
positive.
Reason.
Yeah, exactly. There's other functions too, other tests, the liver function test or liver enzymes. So your amino transferases, there's two of them, ALT and AST, alanine amino transferase and aspartate amino transferase can show you liver inflammation.
And those are commonly done.
Yes, yes.
And what we find, what I have found anyway as a practitioner, is many people on pharmaceutical drugs have those liver enzymes elevated. And yet they're told, don't worry about it, because the doctor feels that whatever benefit you're getting from the pharmaceutical to control something else, of course, the liver detoxifies many of these pharmaceuticals and it becomes overwhelmed.
Exactly. There's another one too that's measured in that standard battery, amylase, and that can give you some indications to pancreatitis or other pancreatic dysfunction that could be ongoing as well.
Yeah, it's a great thing to look at those. I tell all of my clients that they should get a copy of their blood test. Nowadays, you can usually get it electronically right from the lab. Or ask your doctor's office to print it out. Don't ask the doctor, ask the secretary. He or she is busy to, you know, do that paperwork stuff. But you should keep them yourself, because very often people are not alerted to any of these that might be either slightly out of range or even in range near where they're going to fall off next time. And so you can actually modify your lifestyle to bring all of that back into a normal range and avoid the pitfalls of too much inflammation.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So that's something to do. So I hope we can add some of these more advanced kinds of testing to that you're talking about, where you're actually looking at these zombie cell levels.
So they are. There's other biological age calculators and measurements that people are trying to use. Another one that's very common are called aging clocks or DNA methylation clocks.
Now, the DNA methylation is a pretty simple test that I know they do exactly for with saliva.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we commonly do in natural medicine, where you're looking at a genetic marker, MTHR, in terms of, are you able to methylate in your body? And that's actually genetically related. There are certain groups of people who have deficiencies in methylation capacity.
Sure. But there's also these sites on your DNA that are methylated or just slightly chemically altered. And these sites are known to sort of track with aging. They become methylated with age. And so you can sort of measure your biological age using that. Or if you're measuring over time, if you've done interventions, maybe they change that methylation pattern that makes you look biologically younger.
Ooh, that would be a good idea.
Yeah.
That's an excellent idea. So that's so interesting how we have a lot of ways that we can intervene, especially decreasing, not so much, you can't decrease your level of stress too much because that's life, right? Yeah. But you can decrease your reaction to that stress.
Oh, most definitely. I think, I'm obviously an expert more on the biology, but there's a whole psychology and emotional aspect to it as well. We know that even in some respects that social stress or psychological stress can even drive senescence as well.
Right, any kind of stress. But you have beautiful ingredients at Science Research Wellness, and I guess you can also find that by srw.com, right? That's the...
Yes, srw.co.
.co, oh, .co. And I'm looking at this great page they have there in terms of ingredients, because amazingly enough, they're all actually natural herbal extracts. And if there's any, you know, you'd like to share with us, like how about the astragalicide from astragalus?
Oh, so I have not actually worked with that, but from my understanding is that it basically works to sort of help with your immune system and possibly have some impact on your telomeres.
Yes, they do mention that.
Which are the ends of your DNA, and telomeres are sort of like, if your DNA were your shoelaces, the telomeres would be those plastic end caps. And over time, when your cells proliferate and divide, so as they grow and divide and make new cells, those telomeres or those end caps of your shoelaces start to sort of break down and fall apart. And with stress, so even oxidative stress can enhance that process too. And you have this process called telomere attrition or erosion, or the really your telomeres are just becoming shortened. And eventually, if your telomeres reach too short of a level, you enter into the state of crisis, and these telomeres can then start looking for other pieces of DNA to grab onto because they don't like to be unprotected at the ends. And those can form what are called translocations that can cause cancer.
You know, it's so interesting to me, the deeper we get in science and a lot of these isolates, which are actually from natural remedies, the long history of use in something like TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, or other ethnic traditional systems where they've used these exact herbs for so many years, and they actually came up with a very similar profile of what they might be useful for without the deep understanding that someone of your caliber would have in terms of the true mechanism of action.
I guess it's a case of somebody tried something, it worked, so you kept using it. And, you know, at the time, they didn't have the tools to figure out the science behind it. You just say, I'll figure it out later. It's working, so let's let it work. And, you know, now we're going back to different things that we want to, sort of different processes or pathologies that we want to screen. You know, we can screen natural products. We're very fortunate in that there are these curated libraries of natural products. So we can just start with those.
And some that have been used since ancient times as the plant itself. So, you know, you have a long list of these on the SRW website, many of which I've been very familiar with. But here's one I'm not familiar with, and I'm not sure if you have anything to add to it. And they're calling it 2-HOBA, H-O-B-A. The trademark name is Hobamine. And it says it's a compound found in Himalayan tartary, in buckwheat. And yes. That one I am not familiar with.
So the compound sort of functions as an antioxidant. And as we know, as we get older, you lose your antioxidant buffering capacity. So you lose the ability, not only do you make less antioxidants, but these enzymes that function as them, they have reduced activity. And to make matters worse, your body is producing more oxidative radicals, or what we call reactive oxygen species. And compounds like this can function as a free radical scavenger to to sort of negate the effects of some of these reactive oxygen species.
So even just looking through that, wouldn't it be a good idea to include buckwheat in your diet? I mean, you know, it's part of an old food source that my grandmother, Jewish grandmother, used to make, which is called kasha vanishkas. So kasha is really buckwheat, but I don't think it's utilized as a food that often in, you know, the modern diet, especially the modern American diet.
I can't say I've ever seen a recipe with buckwheat, to tell you
the
truth.
Exactly. However, it is available in health food stores. It is very easy to cook because I use it all the time. It's really crunchy, nutty flavored, cooks quickly and delicious. It's just underutilized. And to see it here where they're actually extracting something called hobamine, which is a trademark name of a component of buckwheat, to me is just quite amazing. And then, of course, we have something from blueberries as well. We talked about strawberries a little bit, but we also have a taro still bean from blueberries.
Yes. So taro still bean, you know, is known to work amongst this molecule called NMN. And it's an NAD precursor that activates a set of enzymes called sirtuins. And they work in combination with a number of metabolic processes, including DNA repair.
And there it is. It, you know, again, when we say eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, we talk already about so many simple foods like strawberry and blueberries, although you might not be getting a concentrated amount. Blueberries also have, similar to what we call resveratrol, and then we know resveratrol is in grapes, but is actually much higher level in Japanese knotweed. And that's one that, you know, has quite a bit of research on it as well. So peppering your day and your diet with a lot of these foods that are now being highly studied. And how does science research wellness present these items so that people can actually ingest them?
So working with Greg McPherson, the founder of Scientific Research Wellness, or SRW, they really take a science-based approach to everything that they include. They isolate these natural products from as many different types of plants or plants that are enriched for them, and they produce them into vegan-friendly capsules.
So they're actually selling a product made from these extracts?
Yes. Yes,
okay.
And there's
and
different
I don't
formulations
see that.
Of them.
Because I thought they were using it more as raw ingredients that other companies can use within their products. Maybe they have
both. They have a number of different formulations, you know, whether it would be for cellular system renewal, something for immune boosting. There's a number of different products that they have.
Yeah. So now I'm seeing that because you told me that, but also very often these kinds of extracts are available and other people are using them within their products to make it available for people, which is just amazing. I really think it should be included as something that's covered by health insurance because it's a better outcome as well as much less adverse effect profile.
Yes, and we're actually starting to see more and more incorporation now of natural products into clinical trials, which is really interesting to see. We had talked about before the NAD precursors. We know that NAD levels decline with age as well as disease, and in preclinical models, they're showing phenomenal results in those NAD precursors like NMN, nicotinamide mononucleotide, and others are currently being evaluated for patients.
And they have great information there because, for instance, one that's called apigenin, it's high in chamomile, but they're actually explaining the fact that to get a concentrated amount, you'd actually have to drink 11 cups of chamomile tea per day, which is not a good thing. I'm not recommending someone does that because they'll be in the bathroom most of the time. You know, that's just too much. But basically, then it's being extracted and concentrated so you can get the advantages of some of these therapeutic molecules. Although it is a great idea to look at where they're being extracted. And like I said, incorporate more of that into your diet. And we talked about so many, even using astragalus and more bioflavonoids and something like olive, oleuropein, olive leaf extract. These are wonderful things to just have as a source. Blueberries and strawberries, I would suggest you make them organic. I'm interested in seeing the fact that they've also looked into cat's claw. And cat's claw, we've been using, especially from Uncaria tomentosa, which is a specific species of cat's claw, for many years. It's a tropical vine, and it can grow really, really far. In fact, Dr. Z is probably finding some similar plant right now on his trip to Jamaica, which is going on as we speak today. So many things that we can really learn more about in terms of natural. And then you were so generous at sharing all that information with us today.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me.
So what would be your recommendation in terms of, see, you're someone who's younger, so you have time to actually switch around that sinensis. So what do you do in your program, having all this knowledge?
I think that, you know, you have to do the easiest things, but they're probably the hardest things of diet and exercise. So, you know, eating as good of a diet as you can and exercising are the easy things that we can do. And then, you know, finding supplementation that you think works for you, and it works, you know, based upon the science as well as your own personal medical needs.
Well, that's great suggestions. And that's why, you know, that's what I do. I exercise every day. I eat lots of fruits and vegetables. I'm not a vegan or a vegetarian. I eat very small amounts of organic animal products. And in the old days, I used to raise them myself because I had a full off-the-grid farm when my children were born, who are now 47 and 43. So it's been a little while. But living that way really has, you know, some fabulous outcomes, such as never taking any pharmaceutical drugs, or if you have to for a limited time, because they do have this really negative adverse effect profile. And looking at the fact there's so much science behind using natural, as well as a long-term historical tradition. So thank you so much for being our guest today. Dr. Mack, can you say your full name correctly for us one time, please?
So my name is Matt Yusefzada.
That was hard for me to get out because it's spelled with a lot of consonants and all, but thank you very much. And you are a PhD with a brilliant history and a long time to come, increasing all of our knowledge in how natural can be scientifically validated and why, on a cellular level, the actions that these natural molecules are giving us, which is just fascinating research. So thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. We love to be on Progressive Radio Network. There are so many fabulous shows. Go to prn.live, I think is where their website is now. And until next time, visit us at naturalnurse.com. This is Ellen Kamine, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.